Welcome to Thing Making, an audio podcast for, about, and by people who make things. So today on Thing Making, I'm talking with puppeteer Danny Miller, and Danny's had an interesting career studying overseas marionette making and also working on the big arena spectacular Walking with Dinosaurs and King Kong as a voodoo operator. So welcome to Thing Making, Danny.
Thank you very much, Lynn. Thanks for having me.
And you've had an interesting childhood. You grew up in a creative environment. So when I read your bio, it almost sounded like you had a license for thing making. So what's it like to grow up in the environment that you grew up in?
Yeah, it's very true. My grandma was quite a renowned Australian artist, so she was painting, so she was always being creative. She had a studio at our house as well, so I was always around that. And my grandpa was a wood turner, so he had a shed up the back, so it was always machinery going, and he used to make toys for charity and things like that. So I was always sort of growing up around it, and my mum was also into crafts and things. So she, at some point, her and my grandpa were collaborating to make these marionettes just for sale, like these little craft marionettes. So my pop would make the wooden parts, and my mum would just paint and decorate them, and they'd sell them at markets and things. And she also made these life-size, almost human dolls, just made from stockings, and so they'd be, at one point, because she was a single mother at the time, and so she'd actually have one of them sitting next to her in the car, so it looked like there was somebody else in the car with us. And so it was kind of a safety thing as well, but also a creative thing, and she enjoyed doing that. So.
And your father, a musician as well?
Yes, yeah, he was in a band growing up, so yep, very, very creative. Creative juices were all over the place. So
fantastic. It's almost like you couldn't not make things, really.
Yes, yeah. Very true.
And so with all those things, with the wood and with the foam, the dolls and paint and so on, there's a lot of materials there that you were exposed to.
Yes.
And a lot of craftspeople with knowledge and skills that you were also exposed to. So I'm just wondering why you maybe turned your hand toward puppetry in the first place.
Yeah, well, I started off studying musical theatre, so that was something I was going to get into acting and performing, and then I didn't finish my course. I did 2 years of the course because I was, in that very well aware that, 10% of actors are in work and all that sort of thing, and I wasn't in the top, say five people out of 20 people just in that class. I was wondering, how am I going to do this on my own? I didn't feel like I had the personality that could really just always be on, always be looking for something and have that rejection in auditions and things. So I sort of said, maybe it's not for me. And then, so I gave that part of it up. And then, eventually just kind of picked up making marionettes as a hobby. And then, it just kind of snowballed from there, like people asking me to do commissions. And so it took probably about 7 years after that for me to actually think, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to try and do this as a profession. And then that's when I applied for the puppetry conference in Connecticut.
At the Eugene O'Neill Theatre Centre.
Yes, yeah.
Excellent. And so is there a particular kind of wood that you, prefer to use for making marionettes, or do you kind of use a range of different woods or different materials?
I usually usually use pine, but I very rarely buy any wood. I really like to find my pieces on the side of the road. So, for instance, the last marionette that I made, his legs are made from a picket fence that I just found on the side of the road. So it's nice to be able to hold the puppet and know exactly where these pieces of material that you've found have come from.
Do you think it lends something to the character of the puppet?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, besides the fact that it's recycling bits of material that might otherwise be thrown away or put into landfill or something.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a sort of added quality that other people would notice as well as you
Maybe not other people, but I think just knowing myself, and if people do ask, I can tell them, and that's it makes me feel a lot better about it. Like, hard rubbish collection is just, it's really great. I love that time of year because you can go around just picking things from, you know, anyone's lawn at the front.
Me too. I find like I'm a danger on the road because I go past hard rubbish and I have to stop and pull over and keep looking, and my daughter rolls her eyes at me for stopping again, and then I think, where am I going to put this stuff? But I can't leave it as well. It's almost like the material is calling to us.
Definitely.
Do you think as puppeteers, and some material or some bits of furniture or fence post, as you said, have a shout louder than other things to you?
I think so. I mean, the wood's just a giveaway. Like, the wood's just always something you can use. So I have no hesitation in if there's a plank of wood or something that I can know that I can use, I'll pick it up because I know it'll be used one day. And some pieces of material I've had for probably 8 years or something, and then I've just recently just used them. So finally I can use that piece of wood, or had a certain shape that I was waiting for something to come along to use it for.
So the shape of the wood, the texture, the weight of it. How do you listen to the material? In other words, to know what you're going to do with it.
Well, definitely the weight. The weight is the biggest thing. Most wood is about the same weight, so I don't really have to think about it too much. As long as I can cut it into the shape that I want, it's going to have the right sort of weight amount, because it does have a bit of weight to it. Especially with marionettes, you need to be careful with how light things are. If they're too light, they're just going to be flailing about everywhere, so it definitely does need to have some weight to it. But other than that, sometimes I'll pick something up because it has a nice shape to it, and I can just work with the shape, like whether it be like an arm shape, or even for a head, so that you can use the shape of something that you found just as a guide. I mean, you can cut it down, but you can use the initial shape of it just to, I guess, inspire the rest of the puppet.
Yeah. So the weight adds a gravity that you're looking for with a puppet, otherwise it really looks like it's real. Mm. And what about the breath of the character or the puppet? Is there other things that you're looking for in terms of material to add breath to give that character life? For example, is there, when you're looking at foam, different densities of foam?
Yeah, well,
plastic.
I've only used the foam the one time, and that wasn't actually for a puppet. It was for more of a mascot, so it didn't need to have it didn't need to be manipulated in any way, so it was just a head. But as far as the rest of the material, as far as marionettes go, so I do use a proper string. So I won't use string that I've just found. I will use a proper string, because the string is really what needs to be manipulated, and it needs to be a certain type to give it that natural movement for the puppet. And so that's something that I don't skimp on, because it's important to the actual puppetry of it. And as long as the string is like the proper string, like you can, as long as you've got the right weights there, it will move the way that you want it to move.
Mm. So you really have to pick up the material and handle it to find out what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, a lot of it's very trial and error.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so it's interesting to me, because you've done work as a voodoo operator, which you might like to explain a bit in further detail, but because you've worked as a remotely operating a puppet using voodoo controls, which are like game controls, but you can you can explain that, as well as very hands-on techniques with wood carving and joining and operating, I'm really interested to know how you find working in those two very different mediums.
Being on King Kong, that was my first professional gig, so it was quite a big job to just stumble upon, I guess. And that was my first experience as a puppeteer, my first real, like, in front of an audience sort of experience. I didn't find any real transition from going from a traditional style of puppetry into this, because I just kind of had it thrust upon me. And so using the voodoo rigs, which are radio controlled. It's very different to obviously physically having the puppet in your hands, because we're watching the King Kong, so the 6.5 meter puppet is in front of you on stage. We're at the back of the audience and we're watching, you know, this massive puppet, but he's also turned towards us, so everything that we do on the rigs, it needs to be it's almost counterintuitive. So if I'm going to the left, he'll go to the right on stage, so as I see it. So you kind of have to put yourself into the back of King Kong, thinking that you're actually what he's doing. So I was just doing the facial expressions mainly, and also hips and sort of a breathing, but you still need to think that you're inside of his head instead of looking at him from the front. So yeah, it's a different, very different experience, I think, than to traditional puppetry. But you definitely need the two, though. To have the traditional style of puppetry, you need to be able to go back to that, and I find both mediums very, very rewarding.
So why do you think you need to go back to the hands-on traditional method of operation?
I think if you can call yourself a puppeteer, like, you do need to be able to do a range of different modes of puppeteering. And so unless you have that tangible and be able to explore weight and breath without being disconnected from it, I think I don't think you really understand it a lot. So yeah, but being that I had made marionettes before this job, like just as a hobby, but you get a real understanding and appreciation for the art form. Otherwise, it would feel like you're kind of playing a game, I guess, and because you're so disconnected, we're 100 meters or so from, or 50 meters from the puppet, it's very different.
It's interesting what you say about looking, when you're operating the King Kong puppet remotely, you're thinking as if you're behind the puppet in a traditional way.
Yeah.
Because most puppeteers are traditionally behind their puppet.
Yeah.
So you're operating from the front, looking at the puppet from the audience's point of view, but you're thinking that you're behind the puppet in a traditional manner.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, when you go back to operating also a traditional hands-on puppet, marionette, after operating a 6.5 meter high King Kong marionette remotely, whether or not you then think of the reverse, where you think of yourself as in the audience looking at the puppet now?
It's a good question, but no, I don't. When you're with the puppet, I think you're quite attached to it, and you're in the moment. And I don't really see myself from the audience, because you very rarely get to see yourself unless you are recording yourself and look back on the performance. I think you need to have that trust, and you need to just you need to actually connect with them. If it's a marionette, you need to be there with it and sort of live through it as you are. Like with King Kong, you couldn't do anything else but actually be away from it. So I couldn't actually be inside it and control it from the inside. So you sort of just need to cheat and just think of yourself kind of being there and controlling.
The advantage for operating the King Kong puppet is you can see what it looks like from the audience point of view. And normally you can't ever see that. You might just imagine it and hope that you're doing what you think the audience is seeing, but you never quite know. But I think when you're operating remotely, you can see what the puppet looks like. And is there room for improvisation at all?
Not really. It was very, very finely, tightly choreographed and in sync, because there were 15 puppeteers at one time controlling this one puppet. So we really needed to be in sync with each other. I mean, all the guys that were on stage that were physically bunraku-ing the puppet, they had in-ears, and one of us, the three that were doing the animatronics, our head puppeteer, Jacob, he was able to talk to everybody on stage. So if something did go awry, it was yeah, it didn't happen very much at all on stage, maybe twice or something during the whole run of the 291 shows that we did. But if something goes awry, we need to be able to keep the puppet alive. We need to be able to communicate to the guys on stage. So, yeah, just not much room for improvisation at all. Not really, but if something did go wrong, we could keep the puppet alive, and we could move him around a little bit. We could make him look in certain directions or interact with somebody on stage, which was great. And it was, it's a very high tech puppet, obviously. But we were very lucky to be able to still communicate and improvise a little bit when we needed to.
Yeah, so you went from King Kong to working on Peter and the Whale recently for Melbourne Fringe Festival.
Yeah, after going to Walking with Dinosaurs.
Okay, so Walking with Dinosaurs, also another big arena spectacular, yes, show with quite huge dinosaur, yeah, puppets that, mm-hmm, are also controlled remotely and, yes, with some hands-on controls, or mostly remotely?
That's all remote control. My job in particular was all the remote controls, but this was a little bit different because the theatre was an arena, so the dinosaurs would travel around the stage. It wasn't just being flat on, like King Kong was very just his face always kind of facing us, besides a few little times. But because the dinosaurs were always moving around, it was a lot easier to have to put yourself in the dinosaur's perspective, because sometimes you were behind it and you, if you're going left and right, it would be going left and right, but then when it would turn around, it would be the counterintuitive again, so you kind of did need to be in that spot with them.
Okay. Yeah. And so then after the Walking with Dinosaurs, you worked on Peter and the Whale, which was a, yes, smaller scale production using black theatre techniques, where the, mm-hmm, puppeteers are in black velvet hoods and gloves and outfit, and also in that show there were some smaller puppets, mm-hmm, some of which had cables with some element of animatronics. Is that correct?
Not electronics, but they all had mechanisms inside. Well, not all of them, but some of them did have mechanisms inside them. Some of the more sophisticated puppets, like the shark and the sperm whale. And so that they did have almost like a big rod, a rod that was being held by myself on my shoulder, and it would project like 2 meters away from me, and then the strings and things that would be inside, like flapping like his tail, like side to side, and yeah, being able to control him like that. There were pulleys and winches and things that worked from there. But a lot of them were very Bunraku style, or rod-based puppets, yeah, that were, yeah, yeah, were very traditional as well.
So how did you find working on that after working on big puppets and big things to working in smaller things, with smaller things and also closer to the audience?
Yeah, it was definitely a different experience, but it's all, I don't know, once you're actually on the show and you really get a handle of it in rehearsals and things, you get a handle of what you need to be doing, it doesn't become foreign to you anymore. It's very easy to sort of transition from one to the other, I think, because the main thing is you're thinking that you're bringing these, whatever beast or character you're bringing to life, like that's kind of what you're thinking about, no matter how you need to do it. It's but yeah, this space was a very small space. Mm-hmm. We only just fit in, and the puppets, especially the ones that were on the long rods, would only just fit inside the space, so it needed to be very, very precise, and yeah, very precise.
When you talk about bringing a puppet to life, no matter what kind of puppet it is, whether it's a big puppet or a smaller puppet, or whether it's got, you know, quite sophisticated animatronics or computer operated controls or not, what do you think are the qualities that you need to, the skill that you need to bring to the material to bring it to life?
Well, I think you need to have, to begin with, you need to have an empathy with the characters. You need to know what their sort of motivation is, like why they're there, what they're wanting to achieve on stage, what they're looking to do, I guess. It's a big part of it. You need to be able to understand the story and what it's doing in this particular moment, how it's feeling, how it would be breathing, where it's looking, especially because, you know, it's an inanimate inanimate object, so you do need to bring it to life. Like, the most important thing is to keep the puppet alive, really, in any situation.
Yeah. So focus and breath. Mm. So I'm just wondering what's next for you then?
Well, the Walking with Dinosaurs finished up in this April in for the Australian tour as well. And so I'm kind of looking at whenever that will come up again. There are talks about 2017 doing an Asian tour, but yeah, it's not all set in stone or anything yet, so we're kind of waiting on that to be announced, or whether it be in the next year or so. But otherwise, just keeping active, picking up lots of different little projects, just focusing on my workshop and actually making puppets and other commissioned work for other people. Especially, really like working with local artists around who need my sort of expertise to make things or to just be a part of their product. I think it's important.
So if somebody's listening and they want to have a look at your work, they can have a look at your Instagram account, and I'm, with your permission, going to post the link to your Instagram account at
Being
Danny Miller, which is your Instagram account, so they can have a look at some of your beautiful work on there. And you've got quite a lot of pictures of toys in different environments, which is kind of fun. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that is and that your amusement, I think?
I'm a very nostalgic person, so I have a big interest in retro style toys, toys that I grew up with, especially figurines and things, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and just those sorts of, that sort of era, Warner Brothers, and all, just little figurines that I picked up around the place. Because I went on tour last year with Walking with Dinosaurs across North America, and New Zealand and Australia, we took a few toys and also bought a lot of toys over there.
That you had Fred Flintstone, picture of Fred Flintstone backstage with the huge dinosaurs, which is entirely appropriate for Fred Flintstone. It's almost like he couldn't help himself but be in that picture, excited to be backstage with all the dinosaurs.
I looked for situations where I can take a photo of the figurine of where I was, because we did visit 25 cities in North America. And so I'm not a big selfie fan, so I didn't want just a whole lot of photos of myself. So my way of kind of showing people where I was to take a photo of a different toy in every sort of state. And I've made a book of it since I've gotten home. I just made a book for myself, which is nice just kind of to have.
Oh, fantastic. I would love to see that book, actually. But in lieu of that, we can look in your Instagram account. Yeah. So I'm just going to ask you a last question, which is, what's your favourite material and why?
I have to say wood. It's just, again, I'm a nostalgic person, and there's a bit of romance attached to wood and to really carving something out of something that's so solid, and just it's sturdy. It has correct weight, and you can really, there's a lot you can do with wood. It's not just for houses and furniture. I like being able to make something that can actually come to life from a piece of wood instead of just being something that just stands there. That's actually, and wood used to be alive. There used to be trees, comes from trees, that was a live thing. So it's nice to bring it back to life, I guess.
Wonderful. Thanks, Danny.